I call Senate Resources Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, March 25th, 2026, and the time is 3:30 p.m. Please turn off your cell phones. Members present today, Senator Rauscher, Senator Myers, Senator Klayman, and myself, Senator Giesel, Senator Willikowski, Senator Dunbar, and Senator Kawasaki are also with us. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Heather and Kyla for helping us out today. We have four bills on our agenda today. We're going to start out with Senate Bill 230 related to Jonesville, Senate Bill 200 related to farm and agricultural land, House Bill 33, conflict of interest, and Senate Bill 224, public land. So, first up is Senate Bill 230. This is the second hearing of this bill. I would invite Senator Rauscher and his staff, Isabel Ordaz. There we go. If you'd come forward and very briefly just review the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rauscher, District O, for the record. Just a real quick recap. I want to thank the committee for hearing the bill again. I really do. Thank you, Madam Chair. So just a real quick recap. SB 230 updates the statutory boundary language for the Jonesville PUA by adding a section of land that was inadvertently left out of the PUA. If not added, this creates a dangerous situation for the campers in the area and nearby homeowners as it escapes the no trash dumping regulations, the no car burning regulations, the no Tannerite bomb exploding at 3 a.m. and shooting regulated allowances in the PUA. So I hope the committee will see the importance of this bill and passing it out. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Rauscher. Also online, by the way, is Christy Colas, Director, Division of Mining, Land, and Water from the Department of Natural Resources for any questions. We did have an amendment deadline set for this bill for March 20th, my office did receive one amendment. Senator Klayman, would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move amendment N.2.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Senator Klayman, would you explain your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Amendment number 2 does not change the Jonesville public use area. It removes the Business Park Wetland Special Management Area in Midtown Anchorage. Provision that is included in Governor Dunleavy's public lands use bill, SB 224. Both the municipality of Anchorage and the state support removing the wetlands designation. The area is not a wetland anymore due to the commercialization and development in Anchorage. And the area collects trash and can be an area of concern for homelessness. And so this addresses an important concern in Anchorage and fits within the subject matter of the bill.
Very good. Do members have any questions related to the amendment? Senator Rauscher, would you like to comment on the amendment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rauscher, for the record. So the amendment is acceptable as it's drafted. I understand what it does. It makes clear targeted changes to SB 230 by updating the bill language. And I do appreciate the what they're trying to do with your amendment. I realize the importance there. And I also understand that the DNR is here if they want to comment, but I know it's part of another bill that they saw that was good. Whether they have an opinion or not, I don't know.
Thank you, Senator Rauscher. Ms. Colas, do you have a comment about the amendment?
For the record, this is Christy Collins, Director for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. Obviously we support the removal of the designation for Business Park Wetlands as it is in Senate Bill 224. We always prefer, of course, to see Senate Bill 224 move forward, but we are neutral on this moving into SB 230.
Thank you very much, Ms. Collins. Seeing no questions from committee members, then I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to amendment number 1? It's actually amendment number N2, NOME 2. Very good. The amendment has been adopted then. I will open now public testimony on Senate Bill 230. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 230? Seeing no one, I will look online, and I see no one wishing to testify online either, so I will close public testimony. Senator Wilikowski.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 230, version 34, / LS1333, / N, as in Nikiski, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. Legislative legal has the authority to make any technical and conforming changes.
Are there any objections to moving the bill? Seeing none, Senate Bill 230, version N, as in no, moves from committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Members, please stay after the meeting to sign the transmittal documents. Thank you, Senator Rauscher.
Thank you, members. I appreciate it.
Next up is Senate Bill 230, Farm and Agricultural Land Assessments. This is the second time we're hearing the bill. I would invite Senator Bjorkman, sponsor of the bill, and his staff, Laura Ashi, to come forward. The first time we heard the bill, we heard from the sponsor, and we heard from a divided testimony.
Or 200?
Pardon me, 200. Did I say, I said the wrong one? 200. Thank you.
I was looking for 230.
So you were looking for the wrong one. So sorry, my mistake. I have, yes, wrong one right there. It's 200. I'm sure Senator Bjorkman was puzzled as well. Welcome, Senator Bjorkman. Would you give us a brief review of your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the esteemed Senate Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Senator Jesse Bjorkman, and I represent the northern and central portions of the Kenai Peninsula. The bill before you is kind of a cleanup bill from a bill that we passed a couple of years ago dealing with farm tax deferments and making sure that the folks who are participating in the farming ecosystem are eligible to have their property taxes assessed at the farm use rate. And the farm use rate is set by municipalities themselves. They are responsible to set that. It's something that they control based on what other properties are available for similar use in their municipality. And so that does give a certain amount of local control. What this bill does differently than it has in the past is it allows farms who are organized under subchapter S to also qualify for that farm use assessed rate. Previously, it had been brought forward by some stakeholders that they thought that filing a Schedule F would be sufficient to qualify. However, many farms exist under subchapter S. This bill would allow them to submit their paperwork as well and qualify for the exemption. Also, this bill would reincorporate into the farm use rate the law as it was for many, many years, decades before we changed the law in 2024, so that the production of flowers and hay for horses would qualify for the farm use rate. What this does not mean is that people's horse properties or horse barns or other recreational horse facilities qualifies. They have to produce agricultural products, meaning they have to produce things on their farm that they are selling in order to qualify. So someone who has a recreational horse property, unless they sold the horses to, like, eat, they wouldn't qualify. So those are just a few of the highlights, Madam Chair, and I stand ready for your questions.
Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. Are there any questions for the bill sponsor? Senator Bjorkman, by the way, I will also add that Sandra Moeller and Dan Moeller, DCCD, are online for questions. At least I thought they were. Let me take a look here. I will revoke that. I don't see them. I do see Dan Nelson, state assessor from DCCED, who is online for questions, and Brian Scoresby, director of the Division of Agriculture in DNR, who is online. Senator Bjorkman, I have inquired of the municipality of Anchorage, and they indicated, first of all, that in the municipality, this was a very small amount of exemption, and actually would have a negligible effect on the mill rates in Anchorage. But they also said that they're currently evaluating the farm exception as to whether horse farms in Anchorage and Clark's Apple Orchard would qualify. One of the applicants, they say, is Clark's Apple Orchard. While not official, that it appears they would qualify with one of their properties. I know that was a question that I had and received an answer back to, as well as the farm use land assessment program assessments and for the various areas around the state that would possibly be impacted. Any other questions for committee members? Senator Kawasaki, or yeah, for the bill sponsor?
Yeah, thanks. We had this question that came up last week about farms that are indoor farming and how that would apply currently. Is, I mean, would this now, would this apply to indoor farming and indoor sales?
This is Laura Ashe, staff to Senator Jesse Bjorkman. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I believe that it would. My understanding is there is precedence, case law, in fact, from a number of decades back in which a greenhouse was growing things in the greenhouse, and it was determined that although at that time the structure was not covered, the land on which the structure sat would be eligible for the deferment because they were growing food in the greenhouse and selling it. Now that current law allows for the structures as well, it would be if they were under current law producing food, or under this change producing any sort of agricultural product for $2,500 a year or more in sales.
Follow-up, Senator Kawasaki.
And under this farm use exclusion, is that also, does that also include marijuana?
The bill, through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, the bill currently excludes marijuana, and the current statutes do not allow for marijuana.
Follow-up, Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, I do have an amendment relating just specifically to that on the on page 3, but we'll talk to it when we get there, I guess. The hay for horses, I know this just particularly because it did happen in the Fairbanks region where we did have a person with their own, I guess they had a farm tax exemption at some point. They lost it because they had hay for their own horses, but not for, they weren't selling their farm. They were just keeping it for themselves. But if they were to now have a business license, line of credit, and then decide to sell $2,500 or more of hay, would their entire farm be exempted and be considered farm use at that point?
Thank you for that question, Senator Kawasaki, through the chair. The answer is that the land that they use to produce the products, so their hay field, that land, and any land that they might have connected as to it, like a soil conservation plan or other thing, but that would have to be an officially filed document, that land would qualify for the farm use rate. It would not be their entire property. As we discussed last time, you could not have an entire parcel and only farm part of it and get the deferment for the entire parcel. It specifically applies to the land involved in producing products from the land.
So just to follow up,
Senator Kawasaki.
Would the structure that's on the land that is used in part from the business, would that count too?
Through the chair to Senator Kawasaki, the part of the structure that is used, or any structure used to support the farming operation in the production of the products, it would be eligible for the same farm use rate deferment. However, again, in the example I just said, you could not have a massive building and only set up a corner of the shop to support the farming operation and that have that deferment apply to the whole building. It would only be the apportionment of the building that is used to support the farm operation.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions for the bill sponsor? Yes, Senator Rauscher.
Thank you. So just to follow through the chair, to follow up on what we're talking about right here. So if 75, 80% of their land is crop, and then they have a house, which they live in, and maybe a barn where they park their cars, that's excluded, the house and the garage?
Through the chair to Senator Rauscher, I think you could make a good argument that the part of the dwelling which is used to support the farming operation as well as any the buildings or parts of buildings that are used to support the farm operation could fall under a farmland use deferment. I think as we kind of contemplate other policies in which we talk about dwellings or other things to support farming operations under other policies that we have, I think that there's kind of a clear direction that as people are engaged in the operation of farming, that those properties and improvements that have to do with farming should fall under the farm deferment rate.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Seeing no further questions, we do have amendments that were offered. The amendment deadline was set for March 20th, and we have three amendments. So I'm going to move the first amendment, which is I.3.
Object.
There's been objection. I'm going to call on Sandra. I'm looking actually, Sandra is not online, and she was going to speak to it. I will call on my staff to explain the amendment. The amendment, as my staff is coming to the table, the amendment was offered, suggested by Sandra Mahler, DCCED, as a slight correction to the bill.
For the record, Paige Brown, staff to Senator Giesel. The difference in the amendment is it would amend the effective date in SB 200 to February 1st, 2027. Currently, regulation updates from a previous bill are still in progress, and this would help the department get through those regulation updates more efficiently.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Any questions for Ms. Brown on the amendment? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I have one, I don't know if it's a question so much as a concern. I have an amendment of my own that makes this optional, this whole sort of framework optional for municipality of Anchorage, whereas the assembly would have to pass their own ordinance to adopt these exemptions or deferments, if you want to call them that. I am a little worried if we push the start date out, will some folks this year apply for the deferment? And then, you know, one of the data points you have is that very few people have applied to it in Anchorage, which I think is a good thing in the sense that if we're going to alter it now, now's the time to do it because very few people are going to be impacted. But if we significantly expand the people who can get it and then they get it and then the rest of the bill goes into effect, you know, folks are going to feel that loss more than they otherwise would. I guess my question then for Ms. Brown is, given the other regulations haven't come through yet, could people already be applying for these things? Is it all paused until those regulations are completed?
Senator Dunbar, I am going to call on Dan Nelson. I have an error in my script. His last name is not Mueller. Dan Nelson, who is online, State Assessor, Department of Community Regional Affairs, DCCED. Mr. Nelson, Could you speak to Senator Dunbar's question and also the purpose of this amendment?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, Dan Nelson for the record, the state assessor. Yes, currently they could apply for this deferment. The application is available for how the law currently stands in statute, and it is due on or before May 15th of each year. And so, yes, for the regulations project, the extension, the regulations are going through Administrative Order 360, which is to review all regulations and reduce regulations as well.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Senator Dunbar, further questions?
Well, I'll just say, Madam Chair, I thinking a little bit more about it, the expansion would also be on hold, though the prior regulatory package would not. The expansion would also be on hold, and so hopefully we wouldn't sort of trick people into applying for something they're eventually not going to get. So I see that there's a balance here. I'm not thrilled. I'm sure the sponsor isn't thrilled that this is yet another regulation that's gotten caught up in AO 360 and has prevented Alaskans from accessing a benefit that they otherwise already would be getting. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Further, further questions on the amendment? Senator Bjorkman, do you have comments on the amendment?
We support the amendment, ma'am.
Thank you. All right, seeing no further questions, Senator Wilkowski, do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection.
Is there further objection? Seeing none, amendment number I, as in India, 3, has been adopted. That takes us to the next amendment that is offered by Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment I.5.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, as we are expanding this exemption to S-corps, to flowers, to some other things, it is starting to impact potentially significantly more properties. In Anchorage, that also ties to, as the senator from Fairbanks indicated, indoor growing operations. And so while I don't oppose the intention of the bill, and I think that certainly in places like Kenai and the Matsu, it could be very useful. I think it might have unintended consequences in Anchorage, where certain kinds of land are at a premium. And so what the amendment does is it essentially makes the statute optional for Anchorage, opt in for the municipality of Anchorage. It does so by setting a limit of a home rule municipality with a population of more than 100,000. So that municipality would have local control. Their assembly would have to pass an ordinance, and they could adopt all or part of this statutory framework. I'll say that there's been a concern raised that maybe this might also apply to the Matsu. I was under the impression that a home rule municipality with a population more than 100,000 only was Anchorage, that the borough was not a home rule municipality. Just as I was walking in here, someone expressed that maybe that wasn't the case, but I believe that the borough is not a home rule municipality. I had asked for legislative legal that the amendment be drafted just to apply the municipality of Anchorage. And if you need a rational basis for why it's Anchorage and not other parts of the state, I'll say Anchorage has some unique challenges right now, some unique land use discussions around housing, which we significantly value. And so I think there is a reason to give Anchorage the ability to opt in. And again, it's sort of interesting. The state of Alaska imposes rules on local governments when it comes to property taxes. That is not the case in all parts of the country. We are fans in the state of doing mandatory exemptions and then not funding them. I am generally in favor of local control. Not in every case, but I think this is a good example of where I think the assembly will craft and pass an ordinance that has to do with this. But I want them to have some local control over what that looks like. So I don't know if there's anyone online, ma'am, who, Madam Chair, who might be able to answer the question about the Matsu borough or any other boroughs. But it is my intention that this only apply to Anchorage, and I believe that is the only home rule municipality in the state with a population over 100,000.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. I believe Dan Nelson, the state assessor, may have some additional information. Mr. Nelson, did you hear the question from Senator Dunbar?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, Dan Nelson, for the record, state assessor. I do believe that the Matsu Valley is a home rule borough, and from my understanding, I do think they have a population over 100,000, but I would have to confirm those two. But from my understanding, I do think that they are a home rule and over 100,000.
A follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Senator Dunbar.
I agree that they're either over 100,000 or they will be. I had thought that a borough and municipality were two different things under Alaskan state law. That is, the municipality of Anchorage is a unique legal structure, a unified city and borough. I mean, I think the CBJ is as well, but where we had unified in the 70s to create a home rule municipality as opposed to a first-class borough or whatnot. Is that not the case? Or perhaps there's someone from the Department of Law that we could contact?
I don't see anyone from the Department of Law. The only other person with a credential, so to speak, would be Brian Scoresby, Director, Division of Agriculture, Department of Natural Resources.
No. Can I offer a conceptual amendment to my own amendment, Madam Chair?
You may, of course.
I will change 100,000 to 200,000.
Would you identify the location of your amendment, the page, line
so
number, please?
So on page 25, change 100,000 to 200,000, and on page 27, change – I'm sorry. Line. Page 2, line 5 and line 27, change 100,000 to 200,000.
Senator, I'm looking at the amendment, and I see it on line 27 of page 2. I don't see it anywhere else. Maybe I'm missing it. Perhaps you could help me again. You see the number somewhere?
I think on page 25 it's there, unless I have it.
There's no 25.
Line 25.
There it is. I see it. Thank you. I didn't see that second one. Thank
you. My fault.
I do have current information that the Matsu 2020 census was 117,000 people in the Matsu population. Just identification. Is there objection to Senator Dunbar's conceptual amendment?
I'll object.
Yes, Senator Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, I know we're talking – now we're getting a little bit far out of the league of resources. It's a municipal sort of issue. I served on a city council, and so our first-class city in Fairbanks is a home rule city, have a charter. It's my understanding that home rule cities and home rule municipalities can already make policies as long as the state doesn't prevent it. So I'm wondering if we're limiting what a home rule municipality can do by putting this in place. And so I'm just trying to figure that out. And then secondly, I'll just say that broadly, I would prefer that first class and home rule municipalities and cities are allowed to do whatever they can, and that I would prefer that our second-class boroughs like Fairbanks also have this power and it to be not limited to the home rule municipalities. So I'll just say that's not related to this right now. But
can I speak to the first point, Madam Chair?
Just a moment. Did you have
an objection?
You are objecting. There's been an objection. All right. Before you speak, Senator Dunbar, I have been informed that Chris Orman with the Department of Law is online. Mr. Orman, perhaps you could clear up this question. Senator Dunbar, would you restate the question that we are contemplating?
Mr. Orman, in this amendment, it states that in a home rule municipality with a population of more than 100,000, they'll have the ability to adopt the ordinance. Are there home rule municipalities with a population of more than 100,000 in the state other than Anchorage?
Senator Dunbar, this is Chris Foreman, Department of Law and Natural Resources Section. So I will admit that there was a time in which, and through the chair, there was a time in which I was a municipal attorney, and I feel like I may have known this, but I honestly do not know the answer at this time. So I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Orman. Appreciate that. Yes, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To your first objection, your question, Senator Kawasaki, about whether we are limiting the powers of the municipality, I do not believe the amendment does so, because this is a mandatory statute from the state. That is, this farm, and the maker of the statute could contradict me, but I believe, unlike other exemptions, some of which are optional, this is mandatory. They have to adopt the state law when it comes to this farm tax deferment. And so this changes that and says they have the option to join it, but it is not mandatory.
Further discussion about the amendment to the amendment?
Yes,
Senator Kawasaki.
And I guess my comment is that I'll just say that I think that there's other municipalities that also would not like to have a statute placed on them where it's a mandatory exemption. And I'm just speaking for my own municipality. I know Anchorage is bigger, but I think some folks in Fairbanks would also have that disagreement. But we don't have any memos from our municipality in Fairbanks at this time. So I hope this is researched, though, before it moves very far.
Senator Bjorkman, comments on the amendment to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the discussion about this topic. I think it's important to recognize what current law and immediate past practice prior to 2024 has been when we consider this amendment. This amendment does not simply seek to change the law being considered to change in Senate Bill 200. It seeks to substantially change the current law and the current farm use rate that people can enjoy within the municipality of Anchorage or under consideration of other municipalities as well. It would take the mandatory exemption away from people. The intent from the maker of the amendment, I believe his clearly stated intent was in the municipality of Anchorage. Any further expansion of that intent would take the farm use rate away from people who currently have it now on their farm use land and buildings. If this were tailored to only apply to the addition of farms organized under subchapter S or flowers or hay for horses, then it would only be adjusting the language that is sought to be changed with this piece of legislation. This amendment goes far beyond that in scope and takes the farm deferment away from people who currently have it now. It was my hope that local governments would optionally adopt to institute the deferment for flowers and hay for horses. However, they largely have not. They have chosen to raise taxes on that group of people by thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of dollars per year by not taking up that optional exemption. That's not been the case in Anchorage, as there is nominal impact, as we heard from the Anchorage assessor, but around the state that has been the case. So I can't support this amendment, but I appreciate the discussion.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Clayman.
Just point of somewhat, I guess it's a point of order. Are we taking up the simple question about whether to change 100,000 to 200,000, which is the amendment, or are we considering the whole amendment right now? Because I understood Senator Bjorkman to be talking more about the whole amendment.
Well,
I'll withdraw my objection to the amendment to the amendment.
Thank you. Is there further objection to the amendment, which changes the number to 200,000 related to the population? No further. Therefore, the amendment for the amendment has been adopted. We're now speaking to the amendment that's offered by Senator Dunbar.
And just
Senator Klayman.
Senator Bjorkman, your comments were to the whole amendment, not to the 200 versus 100?
That's correct. Okay. My apologies.
That's okay. I just want to make sure. I was having a hard time connecting the 200 to everything you were saying. So.
Well, in a sense, the Mat-Su has a population of 117,000, so they would have been included in the more than 100,000. But regardless, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got some information texted to me from AML that actually the original definition did not include the Mat-Su because we were right about what a home rule municipality is or is not. But that has now been set to the side. We don't need to debate that because it's 200,000. I'll just say to the maker of the statute, those comments. What the amendment does, it does not take away the farm deferment. It allows the municipality of Anchorage to decide whether the deferment will be offered or not. And so I expect that most folks that currently get it will still get it when the ordinances are crafted, if they are crafted. But I'll say beyond that, there are things happening on the Kenai Borough and the Mat-Su that I don't want to interfere with. And what Senator Kawasaki said, I agree with that. I think there should be more local control. But the state and the Mat-Su Borough and the Kenai Borough have their own relationship when it comes to agriculture. I don't want to interfere with that. But data gathered by you, Madam Chair, and by the senator from Kenai indicates that very few people in Anchorage are currently impacted by this amendment. And that is why, while it does change not just the portions dealing with 200, but also the prior portions of this law, now is the appropriate time to do that. Again, because so few people are impacted, and because this is an opportunity for us to restore that local control and for the municipality of Anchorage to decide whether they want to continue with this or expand it as 200 is proposed. So with this amendment, I can support the bill because the bill primarily deals with Kenai and with Mat-Su and other places where there's a lot of agricultural land. I just want to minimize unintended consequences in the municipality of Anchorage. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Senator Bjorkman, what is the population of the Kenai Peninsula Borough?
Thank you for that question to the chair. I believe the population is about 55,000 people.
So they would not, Senator Bjorkman, be affected by this amendment? That being 200,000?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. Further discussion? Senator Kawasaki?
Just a discussion to the maker of the amendment that this does actually expand the underlying farm use definition too. So it could include potentially more folks. And it'll still be optional under this amendment, so it's not really debating the amendment, but I just wanted to correct that.
Further discussion about the amendment, I-5, Senator Wilikowski.
I share the sentiments that have been expressed by Senator Dunbar. I think Anchorage has it. I think Anchorage should have a say in whether or not this should apply or not. And I don't want to take that power away from them. So I'll be supporting the amendment.
Further discussion? So I believe I objected for the purposes of discussion. I will remove my objection. Is there further objection? Seeing none, amendment number I.5 has been adopted. We have another amendment, amendment number I.6. Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment I.6.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
This comes to us from a person who works in the cannabis industry and has written a lot of the laws relating to cannabis. And I don't know if it's part of the packet or not. The memo is part of the packet. But I'll just read part of it is that on page 3, what the amendment, what this bill amends is the definition of farm use to explicitly state that this does not include the use of land for production of marijuana. And so that what it appears to do is categorically exclude licensed cannabis cultivation from qualifying as for agricultural land classification and any related municipal tax treatment. From a policy standpoint, it's a notable shift. It's somewhat also inconsistent with how the state has treated marijuana businesses in other contexts. Prior to 2023, Department of Revenue treated marijuana businesses as, quote, farming for purposes of denying access to the corporate small business tax exemption. And so this bill appears to take the opposite approach, excluding marijuana from agricultural use when the classification could provide a benefit. And so the inconsistency, according to Ms. Welson, is that this would raise fairness concerns viewed by the industry. And so that's why I brought this item forward. And I'm not sure if the memo is also released to everybody in the committee. Sorry.
It was not received by my office, so it was not included.
I think you can just have this if anybody wants it.
So the amendment I.6 has been moved and objected to. Is there discussion? Senator Rauscher.
I would just like to hear from the bill sponsor.
Yes, that would be the next person I'm going to call on. Senator Bjorkman, comments about the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't support the amendment. Thank you.
Further discussion?
Can I ask a question of the sponsor of the bill?
Sure.
So again, this is according to this person who is the legal mind on the marijuana and cannabis tax issue. She believes that this would definitely change the system. Is that the intent of that language in the bill? And would this change that system of taxation for cannabis industry, for the cannabis industry?
Through the chair to Senator Kawasaki, the answer to your question is no. Cannabis does not qualify for the farm use exemption currently. It does not qualify under this program. It may under another program, but it certainly does. It does not and has not qualified under the farm use exemption, to my knowledge, in the past. This wouldn't change that. This would keep the status quo the same for cannabis and the farm use rate.
Senator Dunbar.
Madam Chair, I guess for the sponsor, then why add this language then if it's already the law that they can't qualify for this?
By adding into the mandatory exemption the production of flowers and not only food, it opens up a question for if cannabis would qualify.
Follow-up questions.
Senator Dunbar.
I think I know the answer to this question, but I just want to ask, you know, the people of Alaska did pass a ballot initiative that said regulate marijuana like alcohol. Can folks who grow grapes for wine or hops for beer, can they qualify for the farm use exemption?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Wilikowski.
I'm wondering it. Because I've heard the same concerns from the marijuana industry also, and I'm wondering if there's somebody from the department or somebody from the.
Well, there's. We had Brian Scoresby. Okay, so that's the Division of Agriculture. Of course, Dan Nelson, the state assessor. We also have Margaret Adsit, land coordinator, Alaska Farmlands Trust. Chris Orman. Not sure who to pick there. Why don't we start with Brian Scoresby?
Yeah.
Mr. Scoresby, could you respond to the discussion related to marijuana and whether it would be affected by adoption of Senate Bill 200 as written, or if the removal of with this amendment would make a difference?
This is Brian Scoresby, Director of the Division of Agriculture, for the record. Senator, we have not had any discussion whatsoever on the cannabis portion of this bill.
And so I have to say, the past, we can't prepare a written response in the future, if you'd like.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Orman, with Natural Resources Department of Law, do you have any guidance?
Senator Giesel, Chris Forman, Department of Law. So admittedly, Senator, and through the chair, admittedly, I have not been assigned to this bill. And so I am learning as I'm listening to this hearing. So I do not have anything to add.
All right. Thank you. All right. Senator Klayman, Mr. Orman, Senator Klayman has a question for you.
And I understand that this is, you're just beginning to study this bill, but is the, I know federal law doesn't recognize marijuana cultivation. Is anything about this bill tied into how federal law tends to treat marijuana? Does that have any impact on what we're doing here? Or is this strictly a, because I know this is S corporations, which is federal taxation law. So I'm wondering if federal law has any impact on this.
Senator Klayman, Christopher Orman, through the chair. So what I have been doing, I'm not going to answer the question because I think, you know, I have some thoughts and ideas about the questions that have been asked. My plan after this hearing is to touch base with Department of Law and those folks and try to get some responses to some of the questions that have been asked today. I think that's the best I can do.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question of him?
I'm going to go to Senator Wilkowski next.
Yeah. For the attorney, I'm curious. Farm use right now would appear to include the use of land for the production of marijuana, but correct me if I'm wrong.
Mr. Orman, were you?
Senator Wilkowski, I think I heard you. I believe that's right. Through the chair. So that's another, I know that kind of question has come up a few times now. That's something else that obviously I'll have folks at Department of Law, and if I'm assigned, certainly we'll dive into and try to get a response back to this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Orman. Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, and a question for Mr. Orman. Sort of relating to that is that cannabis is already treated differently in different contexts, and it looks like what happens is that the language that's in this bill would functionally affirmatively place agricultural use outside of it altogether. And I guess, does that have a ripple effect with, you know, the whole idea that we're trying to get hemp production or other types of cannabis type crops?
Senator Kawasaki, Christopher Orman through the chair. Yes, I'm just was following and tracking your question. And again, I've written that down and something to consider. I mean, as I'm hearing the committee, I think, you know, the questions as far as with regards to marijuana, cannabis, hemp production, as you're noting, it's just, as I understand it, the question that seems to generally be asked is how SB 200 would kind of work within the confines and the construct of the law involving cannabis, hemp, marijuana, all of those kind of issues in general. And so my goal would be obviously to relay these questions and to work on responses for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Orman. So what I'm going to do is set this amendment aside. Okay. And we will allow Mr. Orman to do that research and get back to us. And we will hear the bill again. Now, at the same time, I have at least six people here signed up to give public testimony. And so I'd like to hear them today. They've been waiting. So I'm going to open public testimony. We have made two amendments to the bill. We're holding the third one. So we'll hear from the public now. The first one that I'm going to call on is Priscilla Mott. She's in Soldotna. After Priscilla will be Amy Seitz. Ms. Mott, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
So, Ms. Mott, here's the guidelines. I'm going to give you 2 minutes, but I would like you to start out by introducing yourself, your affiliation, and then give us your testimony.
All right. My name is Priscilla Mott, and I'm going to include my phone number so anybody can call me with questions since we're so limited on time. And my phone number is 907-262-2871. I am a farmer. I homesteaded here with my family in 1956. This was an agricultural homestead. We've been trying to keep farming going through the interim, working outside of the home and outside of the farm to be able to support the farm. But we have been threatened with annexation, which would greatly affect us for over 20 years. We're close to the city of Soldotna. A lot of our farming methods are not going to coincide with the city's rules. And we have wonderful farmland. Last year, the borough changed our taxation deferment by not including anything that was treed. Our original conservation plan called for us leaving treed areas around the outskirts of the field for wildlife, for further expansion of the fields, and that had always been included in the deferment before, no longer is as of last year. So I have a concern with that, but my major concern is that we keep enough good farmland for the future. And the only way we're going to be able to do that is to curb annexation of those lands and to provide tax relief on them as long as they remain in farm use or in future farm use, which means the treed areas also. As long as the purpose of the land is not changed, I think it should qualify for the deferment. Well, the deferment states in itself, if the land use is changed, that we'd have to pay back taxes and interest for the past 7 years. As someone who's not serious about wanting to keep their land in farmland, who wants to develop it and make the money on it, would not have gone into the deferment program to start with. So that's a major concern of mine, is that land that is farmable, either now or in the future, that is owned by someone who wants to keep it that way and not make the money off of developing it, should be able to do so.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Mott. Next up is Amy Seitz. She is the policy director for the Alaska Farm Bureau. She will be followed by Margaret Adsit. Ms. Seitz, welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I was actually calling in just to be here for questions as needed.
All right. That's
if I could provide some comments on the marijuana discussion.
Well, Ms. Seitz, I'll give you 2 minutes if you'd like. Please decide so we can either go on or hear your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Amy Seitz, Policy Director for the Alaska Farm Bureau. Into the discussion on marijuana, and Margaret Adsit next may also be able to expand on this. Marijuana federally isn't designated as an agricultural crop, so my understanding is they don't file a Schedule F on their taxes, which is one of the requirements in the property tax deferment.
All right. Thank you very much for that clarifying information. So next up, we will go to Margaret Adsit. Adsit, Land Coordinator, Alaska Farmlands Trust. After Ms. Adsit will be Anna Lildale. I'm probably mispronouncing that. She is in Homer. Margaret, you're up first. Please introduce yourself and give us your testimony.
Hi, for the record, my name is Margaret Adsit, ADSIT. I'm the Land Coordinator for the Alaska Farmland Trust. I was calling in on behalf of my organization to talk about the importance of having a tax deferment as it relates to economic development and land access for farmers in the state. When we're looking at expanding the definitions to both include sort of exports as well as to include floriculture, in sort of a and hay production in that broader definition, it allows more landowners to decrease their development pressures in towards moving their operation or their farmland towards development. This is a significant concern for us with the Alaska Farmland Trust, given the fact that over the past about 15 years, we've lost about 11% of our farmland just in the Matsu Borough alone. So as a form of looking at economic development in our communities and encouraging farm growth and increasing farmland access to either beginning farmers or farmers looking to expand their operation, having landowners have the ability to bring forward that schedule off and for both floriculture and hay operations, expanded hay operations, is essential to keeping that land intact. And in the absence of having any level of zoning in the state of Alaska, our agricultural lands designations, this is the only current land use form in place that allows for that land to kind of stay in active agriculture production. To the note about Alaskan agriculture as it relates to the acreage, you know, that's also a growing and expanding field. And so I'd encourage you to look for if property underneath things like Bell's Nursery or the like could be included in that, that would only incentivize greater economic growth for those farm operations. And we already spoke to the Schedule F. If you guys need clarification on Schedule F, Schedule F, you think about it as a raw agricultural product. And not value added. So honey, grains, the raw vegetable, not value added product that would be under a Schedule C. So
thank you, Ms. Adsit.
Thank
you for your testimony. Moving on, Anna Lildahl in Homer is next. She'll be followed by Ronald Illingworth in North Pole. Ms. Lildahl, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. For the record, my name is Anna Lilgidal, and I am the owner of Sweetwater Hill, which is a farm just east of Homer. And I had last year on the property tax assessment a 400% increase, 400. The average around Homer was 30% increase. So I'm calling today in support of the SB200. So it takes land to farm, and it takes Alaska land to produce Alaska grown. If we truly want Alaska grown flowers, veggies, fruits, meat, we need to enable the farmers to run successful businesses on Alaska lands. And enabling tax breaks for Alaska farmers is a very powerful solution to enable Alaska grown production. Because every dollar in a tax break becomes inserted directly back into the local economy. I buy my gravel for my irrigation pond from East Road Services. I buy my lumber from my barn from Josh and Sewers. I sell my produce locally owned. I sell my produce to the locally owned closed market in Homer and the goods up in Sedona. My point is that every tax break dollar would circulate around and around the local economy to become $1 million. So the SB 200 tax break dollars, yes, may be a short-term tax break, but I see it as a long-term $1 million in the local economy and securing a lot of growth across generations. Because hopefully it will stop the rapid ongoing loss of farmland. So it takes land to farm, and I hope you will pass this bill and future tax breaks to enable us to produce and contribute to the local economy and expand the Alaska grown. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up is Ron Illingworth, Farm Bureau Floriculture Committee in North Pole. He'll be followed by Mimi Rooney. Mr. Illingworth, welcome.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and thank you for this opportunity to speak today. For the record, my name is Ronald Illingworth. My email is ron@northpolepeonies.com. I'm the owner of North Pole Peonies, which is located outside of North Pole, we're a farm, and close to Eielson Air Force Base. I'm calling today in support of SB 200. The existing relatively high property taxes are their concern today. Farms can be prime land for development, and they receive a lot of pressure to subdivide and sell. We've seen that throughout the state already. Particularly affected are those farms that are near growing communities. They are the most vulnerable to being priced out by rising land values. Whether a farm produces food or flowers, it maintains the state's agricultural infrastructure, supports other businesses, and equipment dealers, soil suppliers, mechanics, Farmers are currently being hit by increasing costs to fuel, fertilizer, and freight. While the state can't control most of those production costs, SB 200 is a way the state can lower our fixed costs and help farms stay in business. Floriculture is a fast-growing sector of Alaska's agricultural industry. There are great opportunities for growth and untapped potential for impact on local economies, but full value taxes make this difficult. I have 30 acres of land, 10 of which is used to grow peonies on, all outside. Taxes on my current property exceeded my profit after I paid all my expenses. I appreciate your work on SB 200 and hope that you will pass it. Thank you, Bert.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up, we have Mimi Rooney calling in from Palmer. Ms. Rooney, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Thank you to the committee for the opportunity to speak today. For the record, my name is Mimi Rooney, and I'm the owner of Brown Dog Flower Farm in Palmer, Alaska. I'm calling today in support of SB 200. I've been farming in Alaska since 2008. In the summer of 2020, my partner and I were able to buy land to expand our farm operation. I currently grow cut flowers on 1.5 acres and sell my products in an annual community subscription at local farmers markets to floral designers and for weddings and other events. By all measures, my operation is a farm. I start seedlings, plant out my crops, care for soil, deal with nutrient management, manage pests, and harvest crops for sale. Sales of flowers grown on my farm far exceed the $2,500 minimum, and I file a Schedule F. I've also participated in multiple programs for the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, that define my cut flower operation as a farm. My land, however, does not qualify for an agricultural tax assessment exemption under the state statute as it is written. Our state has a growing number of mixed crop flower farms, all of which contribute to the local economy through the purchase of supplies, provide fresh Alaska-grown products to customers across the state, and maintain valuable soil acreage as farmland rather than putting it in development. It's important to allow these farms the same tax deferment status that other growers in the state have for land and structures used for farming activities. This will help growers deal with rising costs and encourage more local production of a wide variety of agricultural products. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. With that, is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 200? Seeing none and seeing no one further online, I'm going to close public testimony.
Madam Chair, can we have a brief at ease?
Brief at ease. Back on the record, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will withdraw Amendment I.6.
Amendment I.6 has been withdrawn. I have no further amendments on this bill. Is there further discussion from committee members? Seeing none, Senator Bjorkman, additional comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for your discussion on this topic today. When we passed Senate Bill 179, which included the most recent changes to the mandatory exemptions and excluded farms that had had mandatory exemptions before, I had assumed wrongly that local governments would embrace those optional exemptions and provide the farm use rate to farmers. I am sorry that I made that mistake. Some municipalities and assessors took the work that we did through that bill to help farmers and used that piece of policy as a weapon against farmers to the maximum extent that they could. You heard from Priscilla Mott. She was a victim of this type of weaponization of the good work that we did in that policy, and her taxes went up significantly because of it. The bill language that you see regarding soil conservation plans is a work to incorporate a change that would attempt to restore the farm use deferment that she had. With the decision to remove the exemption for farms that are currently in operation and exist in Anchorage, I'd like to say that I've learned something around the value of the existing statute and how important it is to preserve. If it is the decision of this committee to continue with that amendment in place, it will be difficult for me to advance this legislation knowing that it will take away the tax deferment that people currently have that will be almost impossible to get back because of the inertia of local governments to act. I'll consider that. I understand that there are many people in Anchorage that are forming a farm bureau in Anchorage, but it's not a decision that I take lightly. So as we go forward, I am perfectly happy and comfortable to talk about how do we change changes to the existing statute? What can we do to consider moving around policy within the proposed statute? But what I'm not willing to do is I'm not willing to sacrifice current existing exemptions that farmers have in order to make other changes. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. Further discussion from committee members? I believe I had an objection to the bill for the purposes of making amendments. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 200, version 3-4, /LS1096/I, as in Iggy Agig, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached to a fiscal note, legislative legal has the authority to make any technical and conforming changes.
Are there any objections to the motion? Seeing none, Senate Bill 200, version I, as amended, will move from committee with attached zero fiscal note. Members, please stay afterward to sign the documents. Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. That takes us to House Bill 33. This bill is being heard for the second time. It is a bill from Representative Stutz in the other body, and Matt Greening is here to give us a brief reminder of what the bill was about.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No time is brief. For the record, Matt Greening, staff to Representative Louise Stutz. This legislation would allow members of the Board of Fisheries and the Board of Game to deliberate on proposals for which they have declared a personal or financial conflict of interest according to AS 3952, the Executive Branch Ethics Act. Currently, board members are required to divulge a conflict of interest if they or their immediate family members are involved in the subject being deliberated on. The conflicted members can then no longer vote and unfortunately can no longer speak on the proposal. They must leave the table and sit with the public. Consistent with current law, House Bill 33 still precludes a conflicted member from voting and only allows them to impart their knowledge of a particular fishery or hunt before recusing themselves from the vote. And that's my recap, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Greening. Are there questions for Representative Stutz or Mr. Greening? Seeing none. Thank you. I want to also point out that Joe Falco is online, policy director. He's with ADF&G. We also have a number of people signed up for public testimony. We've not had public testimony yet, so I'm going to open public testimony at this time. Is there anyone here in the room that wishes to testify on House Bill 33? All right, seeing none, I'll go online. So first off is Adelia Myrick with the Northwest Set Netters. She will be followed by Kelsey Hayden from Cordova. We'll start then with Adelia. Adelia, welcome. If you would give your present your name for the record and then give us your testimony. I'm limiting it to 2 minutes.
Yes, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Adelia Myrick, and I'm the president of the Northwest Setters Association in Kodiak, Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House Bill 33. Our association supports this bill because it will improve the quality of discussion and decision-making at the Board of Fisheries. Alaska is an incredibly large state, and our fisheries are highly diverse. Even within set netting alone, fisheries vary widely from region to region across the state in year, regulations, management structures, environmental conditions, and allocation frameworks. When you multiply that level of variation across all fisheries statewide, the complexity becomes staggering. It is simply not realistic to expect every board of fish member to be an expert in every region and every fishery. So our association supports House Bill 33 because it recognizes that reality and allows board members with direct knowledge and experience to remain part of the discussion while still requiring them to abstain from voting when there is a conflict. That balance strengthens the process and helps ensure that decisions are informed by real-world understanding, which ultimately benefits all Alaskans who rely on healthy and well-managed fisheries. Thank you for your time and your consideration of House Bill 33.
Thank you for your testimony. So next up is Kelsey Hayden. She will be followed by James Burton. Ms. Hayden, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Kelsey Hayden, and I'm the director of Cordova District Fishermen United. We represent over 900 commercial fishermen and fishing families in Prince William Sound in the Copper River region. I'm here today in support of House Bill 33 as it applies to the Board of Fisheries, of which CDFU has been a longtime supporter of. When a board member has a conflict of interest, there's a real value in allowing the members with the deepest understanding of the issue to stay engaged in the discussion, even if they step back from voting. Letting them ask questions, share context, and help clarify proposals leads to better informed decisions and a clearer public record. As long as they're not voting, this approach maintains integrity while making sure important knowledge isn't left out of the room. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up is James Burton in Sitka. He will be followed by Darren Platt. Mr. Burton, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of this committee. My name is James Burton, and I commercially fish out of Cordova, Alaska, currently in Sitka for the herring fishery. I am testifying here in support of House Bill 33. In Alaska, particularly as it relates to the Board of Fisheries, many of the most knowledgeable people on these issues are directly involved or have family directly involved in the fisheries themselves. And that expertise is not a weakness, it's a strength. But under the current system, when a Board of Fisheries member is conflicted out of a proposal, they are required to leave the table, sit in the audience, and cannot participate in deliberation at all. Members of the Board of Fisheries are appointed specifically for their experience and knowledge. House Bill 33 ensures that expertise is actually used, allowing conflicted members to contribute during the deliberation so the board can make more informed decisions. Importantly, this bill maintains strong ethical safeguards. Conflicted members would still be fully recused from voting and from offering amendments. Passing House Bill 33 will strengthen resource management, improve transparency, and better align the process with its intended purpose, bringing informed, real-world perspectives into the discussion. Simply put, HB 33 adds value to this process. And now, speaking from a personal perspective, I've been approached about putting my name forward for a Board of Fisheries seat. And each time, I've declined in part because much of the knowledge I could bring to the table, based on both my time in enforcement and fisheries, would not even be allowed into the discussion in the very fisheries that I'm most familiar with. I respectfully encourage your support. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up is Darren Platt. He'll be followed by Jared Bright. Mr. Platt, welcome.
Hi. Thank you. My name is Darren Platt. I participate in commercial sports and subsistence fisheries in the Kodiak area. I'm the owner and operator of a purse seine vessel. I'm the president of the Kodiak Seiner Association. I sit on the board of the Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association. I'm providing testimony today on my own behalf. I'm testifying in support of House Bill 33, which will allow members of the Alaska Board of Fisheries to deliberate but not vote on matters for which they are determined to have a conflict of interest. If passed, the Board of Fish could better utilize the specific knowledge base of its members without compromising the integrity of the process or sacrificing public trust. This would better enable voting board members to make informed decisions, which would improve the regulatory process. And just to second what the last testifier said, I've heard multiple people say they would love to put their name in the hat for the Board of Fish, but because they're not able to participate at all in the matters that they know the most about and have the most concern for, they're not going to do it. So I hope this moves forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up is Jared Bright. He will be followed by William Hayden. Mr. Bright, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jared Bright, and I'm calling today in support of House Bill 33. I'm a lifelong Southeast Alaska resident and have been commercially fishing in Southeast Alaska since 1992. I currently participate in the Southeast Alaska sablefish, Dungeness crab, Tanner crab, red and brown king crab, and salmon same fisheries. I've been involved in the board fisheries process both as an individual and through my board seats at Southeast Alaska Seniors Association, Petersburg Vessel Owners Association, and as the co-chair of the Southeast King Tanner Task Force. During my participation at the Board of Fish meetings, I've seen multiple occasions when local knowledge of the area and its fisheries would have been helpful during deliberations. I'm not sure if any of you have ever seen a board book, but they are massive. We're asking a lot of our board members to understand all the complex issues involved with our fisheries in a short amount of time, often with contradictory testimony. Allowing conflicted members to deliberate but not vote will help the board make the most informed decision possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Last person on the list is William Hayden. Mr. Hayden, welcome.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and to the committee for the opportunity to provide some brief testimony in support of HB 33. I am Billy Hayden, the president of the Homer Charter Association, and we'll be representing that group today. The Homer Charter Association is a trade group based in Homer, Alaska, that represents businesses, guides, and guided recreational stakeholders in the Alaskan communities of the Lower Kenai Peninsula and Kodiak. We are proud of our role in the regional economy and of our ability to advocate for responsible fishing practices. We take a hands-on approach to advocating for responsible policy and fishing regulations in the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, the International Pacific Halibut Commission, and the Alaska Board of Fisheries. The current policy prevents board members from providing expertise or guidance on issues which they have been determined to have a conflict of interest. The HCA believes that this undermines the effectiveness of the board process. Board members should be appointed based on the knowledge, experience, and skills that they bring to the process. If board members are appointed based on these values, then their exclusion from the very issues and deliberations where they would benefit the process the most is non-productive. This goal seeks to remedy that current inefficiency and the overall effectiveness of the board. The HCA supports that goal, and thank you for the opportunity to provide support for this bill.
Thank you very much for your testimony. That concludes public testimony offered on House Bill 33. I will close public testimony. We set an amendment deadline for about a week ago. We received no amendments. Senator Wilikowski.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 33, version 34-LS0328-A as an anchor point from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. Legislative legal has the authority to make any technical and conforming changes.
Are there any objections to the motion? Seeing none, HB 33, version A, will move from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. We'll sign the paperwork at the conclusion of the meeting. Thank you, Representative Stutz. Next up is Senate Bill 224, Public Land Sale Lease Commercial Development. This is the third hearing of this bill. My intention today was to give members the opportunity to hear from the Department of Fish and Game. There were multiple questions related to the bill. And so Mr. Felkel, with the he's the Deputy Director, Administrative Services, ADF&G, is available online. Mr. Felkel, welcome. He was on earlier. He is on now. Mr. Felkel, you may still be muted because we're not hearing from you. All right. I am going to give him a few minutes to figure out the unmute situation that's needed. We also noticed public testimony today, and there are people signed up to testify. So I am going to call on them while we're waiting for Mr. Felkel to, pause. I see Ryan Scott listed here, Department of Fish and Game. Mr. Scott, can you hear us?
Yes, Madam Chair. This is Ryan Scott with the Department of Fish and Game.
All right. So you may be the staff person lined up to speak today. I update my agenda here. So have you heard, actually, committee members, do you have questions for Mr. Scott, ADF&G? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I had questions about some of the repealer language in Section 16 has to do with 1620.030, and it's A8 and A9, and it's just two particular parts. One's in the Kodiak area, and then the other one's the Kenai Moose Refuge. And when you look at the maps, which are tiny in our flyer, it sort of shows these boundary issues. Part of Title 16, though, goes into the impact of these refuges under Title 16, that they have certain characteristics.
Sorry.
They have certain characteristics which are supposed to be held like they're supposed to be used in preservation of moose. I don't have the section in front of me, but I can grab the title if you can start to explain. Does any of that change with just removing that section in Title 16?
To the Chair, Senator Kawasaki, thank you for the question. For the record, my name is Ryan Scott. I'm the Director of the Division of Wildlife Conservation. The simple answer is no, it will not change. The state refuges that you're referencing are overlaid on federal national wildlife refuges, both in Kodiak and in Kenai. The federal refuge system is the land manager. However, management of fish and wildlife resources and across, you know, both state land and federal land rests with the state of Alaska. So the day-to-day management, the hunt management, survey inventory, all of that stuff will continue, and management actions will be taken as necessary, regardless of where a population or a species occurs in relative to state land or federal land.
Senator Kawasaki, we also received a response from the Department of Law, Parker Patterson, and I apologize to committee members. This response came to us today at 2:23 p.m. via email. It was forwarded to you, but an oversight on my part for not having paper copies in front of you. He is responding to that question that Senator Kawasaki just asked, and Mr. Scott responded to. I will read to you the relevant pieces just to cut to the chase. Under ANILCA, both refuges are managed by the Secretary of Interior pursuant to U.S. Code. It states, no acquired lands which are or become a part of the system may be transferred or otherwise disposed of under any provision of law, absent a few exceptions. This language affirms that because Congress created these refuges, congressional legislation would be required to significantly alter the management of the refuges and thus remove these refuges from management provisions under 16 U.S. Code 668DD. Therefore, repealing these state refuges does not impact the federal law and federal protections on these refuges. That comes from the Department of Law, which I believe just underscored what Mr. Scott said. Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to follow up, further in Title 16.20.010, it designates all of these as national wildlife refuges, as state game refuges. And then it goes on to say further down in 1620.060, it talks about submission of plans, and it says that the commissioner of fish and game shall have these requirements that are, they shall submit full plans, they shall have, they shall specify proposed construction work, they shall, it gives a lot of requirements that the fish and game commissioner must do as the state responsible for that land. And so when you, I mean, the way I read it is if you take those two portions out, the Kenai National Moose Range and the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge, and they're no longer under the protections of 1620, then there's also a part about multiple land uses, 1620.050. It says that if you're going to dispose, lease, or use the property within those refuges, then you have to go through the appropriate agency shall notify the commissioner before initiating any of those uses, leases, or disposals of that land. So I guess I keep coming back to the fact that you're removing portions of the refuge that currently have protections that may even be higher at a higher level than the federal wildlife refuges.
A question for Mr. Scott. Senator Kawasaki?
Through the chair.
Yes.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, thank you for the questions. I think there are multiple responses to that. The first one being that, you know, based on the information we just received from the Department of Law, and I was also copied on that, these federal refuges would require congressional action to make any kind of significant land management changes. Very similar, because of that and because of the federal framework that essentially underlies the state refuge designation, we don't have any control over that currently. The federal government, the refuge system, is the land manager. We maintain control over the fish and wildlife resources. The two locations that we're talking about here, Kodiak and Kenai area, I don't know for sure whether or not we have official refuge management plans for those two. I'll have to double check. We do have those plans for almost all of the other areas, and if we don't have it, it's in progress, and they are updated I don't want to say routinely. They do get updated over time. One of the things that I think is important to recognize that those two parcels state refuges, Kenai and Kodiak, we don't have day-to-day state refuge operations dedicated to those areas because they overlie federal land and the federal land managers control the land. Again, I'll emphasize that nothing changes with our responsibility and mandates for fish and wildlife management in those areas.
Follow up, Senator Kawasaki.
Sure, I'll follow up because I'm reading the statute. 1620.010 is so the state has jurisdiction over all fish and game in the state, except in those areas where it has assented to federal control. And so if you assent to federal control by removing these from section 1620, wouldn't that mean it would be federally controlled after that and the state would lose control jurisdiction over fish and game?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, that is not how I understand it. At this point, though, I think we'd have to get another opinion from Department of Law. I'll also add that, you know, we do experience a very good working relationship on the ground at both of these refuges, for what it's worth.
Thank you, Mr. Scott, for that. Are there further questions? Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
I have similar questions. I mean, why? I don't understand why Fish and Game is supporting this bill. I understand why you might remain neutral, but why does this enhance Fish and Game in the state of Alaska by supporting this?
Mr. Scott?
Through the chair, Ryan Scott with Fish and Game. I apologize. I didn't catch the name of the person asking the question.
Senator Wilkowski asked the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. When this bill first came to the department, we looked at it and then went back and reviewed what happens on the ground in a practical sense with both of these parcels. It doesn't
because the federal land managers, they have control of the land, we maintain the management authority and requirements for both the Fish and Wildlife Resources on there. This was a bill put forth by DNR, and it, in reviewing it, it's not a significant impact to the refuge system that's developed, that is in place for the state of Alaska. Management for the resource does not change.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
Other than normally on bills like this, it would seem to me that you would be a neutral position, but you're supporting this. And that sends a message to me that you think this is good for fish and game in the state of Alaska. And I'm curious why. Why is this, why does this new structure make it better for fish and game in the state of Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I don't think it actually changes the structure for fish and game in the state of Alaska. Again, we don't have control over the land as it is present. We do have authority over the Fish and Wildlife Resources.
Further questions for Mr. Scott? All right. I have someone here in the room who's taken the time to come to testify on this bill. So I'm going to have that person come forward. Tyler Breen is signed up to testify. Mr. Breen, please come forward. And we welcome your testimony, which you've already heard is limited to 2 minutes. Welcome.
Chair and members of the committee, thank you for giving this bill a public testimony. For the record, my name is Tyler Breen. I'm the policy analyst with the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. And SEAC opposes Senate Bill 224 and urges the committee not to move it out of committee. We have particular concerns with language in section 38.5400C stating, quote, land in a commercial development park designated under B of this section may be leased or sold without further notice or a finding under AS 38.535E. That statute requires a written best interest finding and public notice before state land is disposed of. The impact of this language is that every individual lease and sale would then, within that designated park, could occur without public notice. So the initial public notice finding would front load decisions and oversight from the public, and then individual actions taken within that park are then obfuscated without public notice. The land eligible for designation includes, quote, state land nominated by a person, and, quote, any other state land the commissioner deems appropriate for commercial development. So any Alaskan or outside interest can nominate any state land, and once designated, that land can be leased for 55 years with an option to renew, purchase with lease payments credited towards the purchase price, and the state's reversionary interest can be waived with no further public notice required. Quote, the department may waive the reversionary interest on a written determination that the waiver is in the public interest. Effectively, in order to manage lands for the best interest of all Alaskans, it's necessary, and we propose that a well-informed public and public notice periods are required for the public to have meaningful oversight of the actions that take place within their communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Breen, the secretary is right over there. She'd be happy to take the written notes you might have to submit, okay, or you can send them in later. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
I don't see anyone else signed up for public testimony. I am going to hold public testimony open, and I'm going to set this bill aside. However, I am setting an amendment deadline for the bill of Friday, April 3rd at 5 p.m. With that, that concludes our agenda for today. Our next meeting will be on the 62nd year anniversary of the Good Friday earthquake. That's March 27th. We'll meet again at 3:30. We will have on the agenda Senate Bill 280, oil and gas property taxes, and Senate Bill 269, Board of Fisheries, from Senator Hoffman. Do not leave, please, members, until you've signed the transmittal documents on the three bills that we moved. At this time, the meeting will stand adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 5:04 p.m.